නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Actually, we were discussing Sabhya Sutta for several weeks, and so I thought of taking a new sutta today. So actually, since we have completed that on last week, and I have selected another sutta from Majjhima Nikaya, which is called Greater Discourse to Malunkya Putta, Mahamalunkya Putta Sutta, sometimes called Great Mahamalunkya Sutta, and sometimes it's called Malunkya Putta Sutta. Actually, Malunkya is the name of the mother, and her son is called Malunkya Putta. So the name of the monk is Malunkya Putta. So she actually this monk is a an old monk and seems to have a fairly intellectual capacity, even though he is old. And again, time to time, asks various questions from the Buddha. And several suttas are available which Buddha preached to Venerable Malunkya Putta. And in one sutta, which is available, I think, in the Salayatana Samyutta, there Buddha delivered very interesting information to him. And probably you have heard about it, talking about mindfulness and how one has to restrain oneself. And after hearing that, he went for secluded practice. And after some time, he then became an arahant. So here in this sutta, actually, still Venerable Malunkya Putta is still learning. So he has a fair some understanding about the Dhamma, and he is answering questions when Buddha is asking. And but sometimes his understanding is not yet thoroughly proven by his own practical knowledge. So this is one occasion that Buddha, in a way, correct him for certain questions. Now this is also very interesting. Buddha is discussing with the monks and continuing as a Dhamma discussion, and Buddha wants to teach them some Dhamma here with regard to five lower fetters. And at that time, Buddha was living in Anathapindika's park at the Jetha's Grove, Jethavanaramaya. So there, while he was there, so Buddha asked from monks whether, actually asked them to ask them whether they remember the five lower fetters, Orambhagiya Sanyojana. Actually, there are 10 fetters altogether, and they are grouped into two groups, Orambhagiya Sanyojana, they are the lower fetters, and then Uddhambhagiya Sanyojana, so they are the higher fetters. Actually, the lower fetters one can overcome by being an Anagami, non-returner, and the other five fetters, they are called the higher fetters. Actually, they only can be overcome by being an Arahant. So you can see there's a significant depth to these things, where this is not easy task in a way to overcome these defilements, these fetters. And if one is able to overcome, that is the first five at the beginning, and then the latter five only after being an arahant. Actually, even within the first five, you can't immediately overcome all five. Actually, it's also going in a sort of methodical order. There are first three fetters which can be overcome by being a stream winner, Sotapanna, and the other two fetters are overcome at two stages. In the first stage, they become somewhat weakened, so then it is called Sakadagami, once returner, and then only it can be totally overcome. Then one is called Anagami, non-returner. So that is, you can see the, in a way, the gravity of these defilements. So they are fairly deeply rooted. And now we are going to discuss this sutta where we get us some understanding about these fetters. Now,
Okay, Bente. I think we lost your
Yeah,
screen.
that's what host disabled participant screen sharing.
Okay,
Okay.
sorry. Try again because
Yeah, yeah.
I
Okay.
was removed from hosting. Okay,
Okay,
great.
now?
Looks like
Okay,
it's
right.
ready.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, it's ready.
Yeah. So at this time, so Buddha is asking the questions, because do you remember the five lower fetters as taught by me? So Dharetano tumhe bhikkhave maya desitani panchoram bhagyani sanyojanani. So when Buddha asks, monks, do you remember the five lower fetters which I have taught you? Then Venerable Malunkiputta is the one going to reply. Venerable sir, I remember the five lower fetters as taught by the Blessed One. Now when he says yes, now Buddha is allowing him to answer how you remember the five lower fetters. Actually, if we are answering the same, very much similar answer, we also might give as Venerable Malunkiputta, if someone has fairly has some about an idea about these five fetters. Now Venerable Malunkiputta is answering, Venerable sir, I remember identity view, Sakkaya Ditti, as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember doubt, Vichikicca, as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember adherence to rules and observances, Silabbata Paramasa, as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember sensual desire, Kama Raga, as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. I remember ill will, Patiga, as a lower fetter taught by the Blessed One. It is in this way, Venerable Sir, that I remember the five lower fetters as taught by the Blessed One. So this is the answer Venerable Malunkiputta provided. And they are basically, he remember the five lower fetters and he simply give their names. But Buddha was not happy about his answer. Basically, now Buddha in a way reprimand him, telling that, when did I talk you like that? So you can see that Buddha as the teacher, he wants monks to have thorough understanding, a deep understanding, and not mere book knowledge, not just theoretical understanding, but he wants to have a further depth to the answer. So now he in a way rebuke Venerable Malunkiputta and correct the answer by in a way giving a very thorough, interesting example. Malunkiputta, to whom do you remember my having taught these five lower fetters in that way? Would not the wanderers of other sects confute you with the simile of the infant? Now the simile of the infant is also very interesting. We know that when an infant is born, he is not associated with anything. He is just a newborn baby. So this newborn baby basically doesn't know anything, and he don't have even a name. He don't recognize people, and he don't know anything about the Dhamma. And basically, he don't have any much of pleasures even. But when one becomes older, only that one starts gathering all that information related to Dhamma, related to others, and he is given a name and he is identifying with that. So likewise, slowly, the growing process is in a way responsible to even cultivate defilements. But on the other hand, as a very innocent baby, so his mind is fairly clean in a way. Now Buddha is putting this parable here. Buddha mentioned a young toddler infant lying prone does not even have the notion of identity. So how could identity view arise in him? Now he don't even given a name, and mother, father still don't assume that he still didn't give a name to him. And so how he is identifying himself? So typically when we were given a name, slowly we adhere to that. We start identifying with that. And when others are talking, our name is the one that we are looking for. and when our name is being called, we get immediately recognized with it, identify with it, and basically we start in a way having a conceit with it. So we compare ourselves with others based on that sort of an identification. Slowly this identification is gathering the momentum. So then later actually we want to highlight ourselves and become a special individual among others. We can't be just an ordinary person. I want to be a special person. So likewise, slowly our ego consciousness is growing, so that we start comparing ourselves as a separate individual, and that is being promoted when we are grasping any of the five aggregates. Sometimes we recognize body as myself. I am young, I am beautiful, I am strong, or I am old, I am weak, or I am just a youngster. So likewise, using the body, we can have a thorough, very strong bondage, strong identification. So that is what very much most of us are having when we go in front of the mirror. So here we see ourselves and we immediately recognize, oh, this is I am. So I am good, I am bad. So there are, say, gray hair, or there are beautiful complexion, or the opposite, whatever the way. So we attribute all these things to the image. We can't even remember that this is simply a mirror image. Rather, we immediately recognize this as a person, as an individual, as myself. So likewise, Buddha mentioned with respect to form aggregate, there are four possibilities of generating sakkāyaditti, generating the identification view. Either immediately recognizing the body as me, direct identification as body as me, body as myself. Or else we can say body belongs to me. So I am someone, I have the body. So body is one part of me. And on the other hand, I is a large entity, and within that large entity, body is another component. That is the third way. Say the fourth way is, body is a large entity, so I am inside the body as myself being inside the body. So likewise, Buddha mentioned per aggregate there are four possibilities. So with respect to form aggregate, there are four types of identification possible. And with the feelings, similarly, there are four possibilities. When we are enjoying certain pleasurable feelings, then actually we can recognize, okay, I am going through a pleasurable feeling, I am happy. So immediately I can recognize, I can identify, I am happy. So I am happy indicates happiness is myself. So I have become that happiness. I have become that pleasure. Or else I am suffering. That means suffering, the painful feeling, is what I am identifying right now. I am suffering. So immediately that suffering nature I have completely absolved. I have completely identified. So that is where we can see the pain, either pleasure, or sometimes we simply say, I am bored. So that means the boredom, the neutral feeling, is something that we immediately recognize with. It is not that just we are merely talking with another person, just for mere communication. That is all right. That's even the arahants would do. But here, more than that, we immediately grasp that feeling. And then with respect to that feeling, we create a self-view, a personality view. Either immediate, direct recognition of feeling as myself, or I belong feelings, or I am within the feelings, so inside me there are feelings. So likewise, there are four possibilities where Buddha mentioned the sakkāyaditti, personality view, could arise in one's mind. and then with respect to perceptions. So the name is such a perception. Say my figure is such a perception. Given titles, designations, my education, all the memories, languages, and all these sort of sanya perceptions are something that I recognize with. I am slowly, say, gathering them, and slowly, so all these different perceptions become myself. I am so and so. I am Venerable Chandaratana. So when I am talking like that, probably there's a possibility how an identification view can arise with respect to that name. So immediately I am talking being that person, being representing that person, being an individual. I mean, sometimes we have to talk like that when someone is asking the name, we have to tell the name. But at that time, we need to see whether we are, in a way, go beyond the limit and identify, or are we simply merely skillfully communicating. Say someone is asking from the Buddha, so even the Arahants are talking that I preach Dhamma, I listen to Dhamma. So likewise, they also refer I. So then one Deva, celestial being, come and ask from the Buddha, so how these Arahants, so-called Arahants, how are they referring themselves as I? Is there is an identity view remaining with them? And then Buddha mentioned, no, they are merely using the communication, they are merely using the convention, thoroughly knowing it is a mere convention. There is no identification. So therefore it is very difficult in a way from certain outside view just to say whether by way of communication whether this person is an Arahant or this person is a worldly being merely by using the language, because both are using the same language, because Arahants also have to communicate with the society. They also use the mundane typical language and skillfully they handle that. But they only know whether they are grasping that or not. The person who, even though he is wisely, skillfully using the language, there could be either grasping or sometimes there is no grasping at all. He knows skillfully this is just a language, a way of communication, and that's it. Other than that, there is no identification. But for the others, when they are talking, there's a significant identification. As they are referring themselves, so they believe that there is a person, there is an individual, and I am the one talking. So likewise, there's a significant difference, and it's a subtle difference. It is not that huge separation available, but it is a very subtle separation available. It's very difficult to even understand how one would use language and all these kinds of nominations, terms, terminologies, conventions, languages, words, etc. to communicate without being carried away by them, without being identified with them. It's a very interesting area to explore. That is also not by mere theoretical understanding that one would do it, one can do it, but rather through practice, one should be able to have that kind of a thorough understanding. So that capacity has to be built upon the mind. It is not that one can theoretically understand this and do kind of an exercise with this. Rather, one has to gradually develop the practice, and the practice would leave one to have this kind of a skill. So that is with respect to, say, perceptions. And the other one is the sankhara, the chetana, volition, all the different wholesome and unwholesome actions, wholesome and unwholesome thoughts, and with that also we identify ourselves. Say when there is a lustful thought, so sometimes we immediately condemn ourselves, criticize ourselves, or when we have certain wholesome thought, probably we praise ourselves. And we immediately recognize ourselves with that. And we immediately follow that intention. So various volitional activities are there, we recognize with that. when we do something. So we like to have pride of it, and we like to say possess whatever we do. And if we write a song, then we like to say, okay, this is my song. If we sang a song, then we can say, this is, I am the one who is singing the song. So likewise, we can immediately do this identification with respect to whatever the creative ideas, whatever the creative workings, and all our actions, thoughts, etc. And with that, we can identify with it. Either we possess them, either we immediately, directly identify with them, or we think that the thoughts represent myself, or within me, thoughts and all these actions are available. So likewise, certain possibilities are there, even in the formations aggregate, how we get carried away by the personality view. And on the other hand, the last one, the consciousness aggregate, they are also whenever we are using the faculties, eye faculty, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind. When we are using these faculties, they are also actually, immediately, we can say, I am the one seeing, I am hearing, I am listening, or I am tasting, I am imagining, I am thinking, I am wondering. So all these communication, the way we communicate, the way we how handle the language, all are based on this self-personality view. All our languages are created like that, by centering a person, by centering myself. So I am the first person, and then there's a second person, and then the third person. That's how the vocabulary, that is how the grammar being created in any language. So I-centered way of thinking. So there is a person, so-called I. So I am living, I am thinking, there is I. And with respect to I, there you are. So you are in the second person. And there are the others, so they are at the third level, third person. So likewise, whole grammar is prepared in such a way to boost this identification view, to convince us that there is a person. So you can see, in a way, we are trapped. If we don't have the association with the Buddha's teaching, and who are the followers of the Buddha's teaching, then we are completely lost. So slowly, our desperate identification become very, very thorough, so that we are completely fixed with such kind of identification. And here Buddha, in a way, emphasizing Venerable Malunkeputta, even to the infant, even though he has no identity, there is no name yet given, still there is an anusaya. Yet the underlying tendency to identify lies within him. So this is the difficult part, in a way. So that is what Buddha highlights here to Venerable Malunkeputta. We can simply name the five lower fetters, but each fetter is lie dormant even in an infant. So even though his mind is at the moment, at present, is clear, free from identity view, but it carries the potential to create identification view. So that's the danger. So even currently, right now, probably most of us say we don't have identification view. But there's a possibility at another time to generate identification view and get identified with something, and again being generated or being enslaved by the identification view, Sakkaya Ditti. So that's the danger. Currently, probably we don't have it, but the possibility is still there. The potential is still there to generate identification view. So therefore, that is even have to be uprooted for one to say that the five lower fetters are completely abandoned. Otherwise, shades are still available. Only at the surface level, things are uprooted. Actually, here we can talk about three levels of defilements. So according to the Dhamma, there are three levels that Buddha talks about the defilements. So this deeply latent type of level is what we call as the anusaya, the latent tendencies. So that is where they are very much like inactive, but the potential is there to get active, to being active. The second level is the active level, or what we call as the obsessive level, and in Pali it is called Pariyutthana Kilesa. So it has come to the surface and the mind is somewhat polluted by them, and now there are obsessive thoughts, thinking going on because of the generation of these, or the availability of these various defilements. Now they have come to the surface level, obsessive level, Pariyutthana. And the third is where, by being influenced by the second, that obsessive level, now we take an action. Now volitionally we do some action, either through the body, to the speech, or to the mind. Then that has become the third level, what we call as the transgression defilements, or the vithikkama kilesa. So we are in a way operating at these three levels. So the vithikkama kilesa, the transgression level defilements, one can overcome even by the morality. So if you are maintaining good moral standards, certain good discipline, then actually you can avoid the transgression, because you are assume that you have some moral fear, moral dread, and even you abide by certain social rules and regulations. So as a result, that fairly probably you can protect yourself by the transgression level of the defilements. But unfortunately, that can't prevent you from the obsessive level of defilements. Even though you are not killing a person, there may be killing thoughts. Even though you are not stealing, such thoughts may be available. Even though one is not involved with sexual misconduct, sexuality-related thoughts may be in the mind. Even though we are not lying, still there may be a thought to lie, but we may not act upon it. So likewise, various defilements, they may come to the surface of the mind. Sometimes they are appearing, someone can even recognize them. But if we are not act upon them, so that means we are a moral person. But still they are in the surface of the mind. So that is where the samadhi bhavana, samatha bhavana, meditation is important. So how you can subside those surface level defilements, obsessive level defilements, and calm down the mind. So calming down defilements, calming down hindrances is the goal of the samatha meditation, where you are able to calm down five hindrances by developing five samadhi factors, five jhana factors. So till the power of the jhana factors are available, those five hindrances, defilements are subsided. You can maintain a calm mind, a peaceful mind, relaxed mind, till the power of jhana factors are available. So here we are talking the obsessive defilements, Pariyutthana Kilesa. Now that can also overcome temporarily by means of Samadhi Bhavana. But unfortunately, the third level, Anusaya level, that is what actually Buddha highlights even in this Malunkiputta Sutta. So you have to overcome them in a very systematic way. It's not an easy task. Actually, that is where the wisdom practice is important, Vipassana practice is important. And because otherwise you can't notice them. They are there, but unnoticeable. That is why the danger, even though we appear like saints, still the potential could be there to generate defilements. When the possibilities are available, seeds may grow. Seeds may germinate. Same thing here. Still the seed level defilements are there. Anusaya kilesa. Latent tendencies are there in the mind. When the favorable conditions, the conducive environment is available, so they promote defilements. By being influenced by that, we even go to a transgression. So that is the danger in a way. So here Buddha highlights that even the infant still have that anusaya kilesa, Within him, the latent tendency to identity is available. And Buddha further mentioned a young tender infant lying prone, does not even have the notion teachings. Now he haven't even heard about the Buddha's teaching. Then how can he have the doubt about the teaching? Because you know, the vichikicca primarily is about the Buddha, about the Dhamma, about the Sangha, about the teachings, about the training. So that is where we sometimes highlight as the vichikicca, the doubt. But this person, this young kid, doesn't know anything about it. So how can there be doubt in him? So but Buddha mentioned here, potential is still there. The latent tendency is still there. That is actually lying dormant. Yet the underlying tendency to doubt lies within him. So underlying tendency to doubt is there. He hasn't overcome that. So as he is growing, so that seed may slowly germinate, and now he generates a lot of defilements. Now he has a lot of doubts, perplexities. Similarly, Buddha mentioned about the rules and observances, silabbata paramasa. Now he, a young tender infant lying prone, does not even have the notion rules. How could adherence to rules and observances arise in him? Now there, Buddha mentioned, the latent tendency is still there. So that is where the problem lies. Yet the underlying tendency to adhere to rules and observances lies within him. So later in the future, he may go through a lot of ascetic practices, he may attach to them, he adhere to them, all this potential is there. But being an infant, his mind appear like a saint's mind, but it is not really. Temporarily only it is like that, it is not complete eradication. It is not that through wisdom he has overcome the taints, rather potential is still available, seed level they are still available. And sensual pressures, also similar, Buddha mentioned this young toddler, infant, doesn't have sensual pressures, any idea about the sensuality and sensual pressures, but still the seed is still available. The what you call the tendency to sensual lust lies within him. And on the other hand, the last one, that is the ill will. Now in order to have ill will, one has to have a thorough or strong grasping about a personality, and as a result of that, I am here and you are there, and you are my enemy or you are bad, I am good. So there requires a strong personality view, and the beings, animals and persons, individuals, humans, etc., etc., has to be thoroughly established. So I have to recognize myself as a being, as a person, as an individual, and similarly I have to recognize another person also as a person, as a being, as an individual. Now I can have a grudge with that person. Now I can have certain revengeful thoughts, hateful thoughts, ill will about that person. But the infant Buddha mentioned, so he has no idea about that. So then how ill will would arise in him? Yet the underlying tendency to ill will lies within him. So that is where Buddha highlights. So Buddha said to Venerable Malunke Putta, now when you are answering, you have to be careful in that sense. So you can't simply name these five lower fetters and say that I know about five fetters. But you have to, in a way, recognize the five fetters within oneself, and even the danger of having them at the seed level, at the latent tendency level, is something that we have to be careful, and that is seems like the most important part. Because other people also very much aware that when the lust is available, when greed is available, when anger is available, that is not the difficult task even. But the difficult thing is to recognize, okay, there's still the potential available even though currently my mind is pure. I haven't completely uprooted lust. I haven't completely uprooted greed, hatred, say personality view, potential to adhere to rules and rituals and doubts, etc. So those ones, there may be a possibility. In the latter occasion, in a later situation, maybe I might get carried away by them. So that is the danger. So that's why Buddha always emphasize, even to the monks, even to the practitioners, till you are overcome, till you have completely overcome asavas, influxes, you can't satisfy with your own practice. So sometimes we are happy about our practice, how we are doing, and how we are different from others, and how much of secluded practice I am having. I am a good practitioner in mindfulness. I have a good concentration. I am able to attain jhana. I have a good understanding about vipassana. So likewise, probably we can have good admiration about ourselves. But Buddha warns, if you still have not overcome the asavas, influxes, don't do that. Still you are in a dangerous state. So that's a very interesting Dhammapada verse Buddha is talking there. Telling that you are enjoying the seclusion, which is very, very rare in the world. You are enjoying the bliss of meditation. That is also very, very rare in the world. You are enjoying certain good practice, morality. That is also very rare in the world. But don't think that you are completely a free person, enlightened person, till you have the influxes, till you have the asavas. So that is the danger. So in this parable also, that is what Buddha highlights, that the infant have that. Even though he is quite innocent, doesn't have any much of identification view or ill will or sensual desires right now, still the tendency is there. Potential is lie dormant in his mind. Now, after this, Venerable Ananda invites the Buddha to explain further about the latent tendencies, or rather the five lower fetters. And now Buddha is explaining that. Here Ananda, an untaught ordinary person who has no regard for noble ones and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dhamma, who has no regard for true men and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dhamma, abides with the mind obsessed and enslaved by identity view. And he does not understand as it actually is the escape from the arisen identity view. And when that identity view has become habitual and is uneradicated in him, it is a lower fetter. Now, here Buddha mentioned, Sakkaya dutti pariyuttitena chetasa viharati sakkaya dutti paretena. Now, sakkaya ditti pariyuttitena. So, he completely overwhelmed by the identification view. His mind is completely abide by that. He is a person now. He is an individual. He operates as an individual. He is fully assumed with it. Assumed as a person. So, it's an assumed personality. So, we create a personality. We create a self. So Buddha highlights here, if this person is an ignorant person, he identified with that in a very thorough, fixed manner. And he don't know how to overcome that. And he even like that. And he even want to promote that. And he even want to prove that. I am a good person. So let me prove that. I am a strong person. So I want to prove that. So I am, an educated person. I want to prove that. So whenever we identify with some way, So there's a necessity to prove it. I need to represent that. I have to live according to that. I have to show that I am so and so. Now say you are doing a kind of a profession. Say you are a doctor. So you want to prove that, you want to show that you are a doctor. And apart from the profession, you identify with that occupation, that profession, and you want to show even during the supermarket, even while you are traveling, even while you are driving, even while you are talking to another person, not to a patient but to an ordinary person. Even there you want to say, I am a doctor, I am working there, I am a doctor. So this is how we operate. We like to represent ourselves with whatever the way we are identifying with it. So we want to highlight as a person. We want to show off in a way. So Buddha, in very interesting way, Buddha showed this, how lie this kind of a tendency within us, not only in the human beings, but even in the celestial beings. Anattani attamanin passalokang sadevakang nimittang namarupasming idang satchanti manyati. So Buddha mentioned anattani attamanin. So when there is no actually a person or any self, but people think that there is a self. Anattani attamanin passalokang sadevakang. See this fools, how these folk, men and women and the devas, how they are identifying with it. Pasalokang sadevakam. Nimittang namarupasmin idang satchanti manyati. By being adhered to the namarupa, name and form, they think it is true. It is the truth. Yena yena hi manyanti tato tang hoti anyatha. Tang hi tassa musa hoti mosa dhammang hi ittara. So Buddha mentioned in the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, or in Sutta Nipata, yena yena hi manyanti tato tang hoti anyatha. So they want to prove them, they want to identify with it. They want to become someone, they want to adhere to something. Whatever the way they want, it becomes otherwise. So whenever they become something, whenever they become someone, so that someone, that something is subjected to the law of impermanence. So it becomes something else. So again and again he have to prove them, because he is in a kind of a difficult task to prove which is something not available. If something is not really available but he is trying to prove it, then it's a very difficult task. So same thing here, that we are trying to prove that there is a person, I am so and so. So I always have to represent that. I always have to act like that. I have to show like that. I have to represent that. I have to stand by that. Because I am living in others' eyes, thinking that I am so and so. I am representing that. I am identifying that. I assume that. I have to live up to that. And we don't know how to overcome that. That's what Buddha mentioned here. Sakkaya dutti parittena cetasa viharati sakkaya dutti paretena uppannaja sakkaya dittiya nissaranam yatha bhutam nappajanati. So he don't know how to get out of that identification view. So when it happens naturally within the mind, he is being trapped in it, entangled in it. He don't know how to overcome that. He don't know how to come out of that. So that's the danger. So actually this sutta give an approach based on the samatha meditation, actually how to overcome that. There are many other methods discussed in various other suttas, but in this sutta Buddha highlights the samatha approach, samatha and then vipassana approach. And we'll see later how to overcome sakkaya ditthi and other things. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Panche. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. If we have any new friends joining us today, if you have any questions, feel free to raise your hand, or you can also submit them via the chat.
Okay, I have a question from our side. So let me ask from Venerable Dhamma Vijita to ask the question.
Thank you, Bhante. I have a couple questions, two or three. As far as the three levels of the latent of the fetters,
mm-hmm.
So the first five lower fetters have three levels. Is that right?
Yeah, we can say like that.
And the five higher fetters also have three layers?
We can say so, but okay. Typically everything, all the refinements, we can say have these three layers.
Okay.
The latent level, obsessive level, and the translation level. Actually, here we can't say that, say, identification view has a translation level. Even we can't, it's not that wrong to say like that. But typically, now say for example, there's a sensual desire. When sensual desire is available, there may be the latent level. Then there may be the obsessive level, the mind being colored by the sensual desire. The transgression level may be that you are involved with illicit sex. So that is the transgression level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you can see, mm-hmm. because there are moral standards to what safeguard the society, so safeguard an individual, but we are breaking those precepts, breaking those rules, and that is the transgression level.
Yes.
Now, with respect to identification view, so likewise we need to find out, so how the latent level probably we can understand that the potential to prepare a self, potential to create a self lies within us. That's possible, definitely available.
Yeah.
Now at the second level, various thoughts are also going on. I am a person, I am so and so, I am with this name, I am with these talents and blah blah blah. So likewise, one may have that obsessive level of the identification view.
Yes.
And the transgression level is where by being an individual, now I am attacking someone. So now actually the identification view being further reinforced, maybe with the patiga, with the ill will, with the sensual desire. So being a person only, I can react like that sometimes. Mm-hmm. Say I'm attacking someone.
Yes.
So I'm a good person, you are a bad person. I want to get rid of, I want to kill you. So likewise, so the individuality, the identification view has become thoroughly established by influenced by that. Now I am acting upon it. The transgression level is there.
Okay. And so, is this identity view, is that a certain kind of fetter, or is that a certain level? Is that the transgressional level where the identity view comes?
That's what the highlights here. We need to consider all three levels.
Okay.
That's why now Venerable Malunke Buddha simply answer identity view as a fetter. Buddha is not happy about the answer.
Okay.
He is telling, no, you have to consider even the latent level of that.
Okay. So it has three levels.
Three levels. But most importantly, the latent level. We need to give some significance to that latent level.
Yes.
So you can't say simply at present, if there is no identification view, you can't claim that there is no identification view. Because the potential could be there. The seed level, it may be available.
Yes. Hmm. Okay. And then another question is, does the latent level inform or fuel the other levels, the obsessional and the transgressional? Is it the fuel?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So if we get rid of the two upper levels, then if the lower level is still active, then it can all happen again.
Exactly.
Be all created.
Exactly. So that's the problem. Now, I mean, still, say for example, just to give a interesting example, now it is said, now say if one generates jhana and he is practicing that to a higher level and he is now free from all the sensual desire, free from all the patiga, ill will.
Yeah.
And now suppose he is born into a Brahma realm and he is still there, stay there for eons. And after after exhausting that potential, again assume that he is born back in human realm. Again, there is a possibility of generating lust, generating hatred. But for eons, it was not there. But that means you can see the danger of that potential.
Yes.
So till we are completely overcoming the potential, so we are not safe. So that is why here Buddha highlights, so that potential is so crucial.
Yeah.
That is the culprit. So that is that potential, till you are completely uprooted, you can't say I am free.
Yes.
So that's the issue.
Do we have to, does the Buddha say, does this have to be work that needs to be done with the latent tendencies and even the other tendencies? Does that happen during our meditative practice? Now, do we investigate that during meditation?
No, actually, we can't immediately recognize the latent level, so we can recognize the obsessive level.
Yes, I think I started to realize those when I started meditating.
Yes,
those became apparent.
Exactly. Now the thing is, now when someone is not meditating,
yes,
so this obsessive level have to come to a fairly intense level for him to notice.
The obsessive one.
Obsessive one,
yes,
has to come to a fair intense level to notice.
Yes.
But when one is meditating, so that intensity become less and less. Even at a very subtle level, one is able to understand that. Even at the very first thought, one can understand. Not need to have stayed in the mind for a long time till it comes to the obsessive level that one needs to understand. But even at the very first thought, one can recognize, oh, there was no lust at all. Now there is a sensual desire rising in the mind. So likewise, so his mind has become fairly cleansed. So as a result of that, he can very carefully notice even a subtle defilement. So that is the advantage. So that means when that seed germinates at that very sapling, you know, at that very sapling, one cannot recognize.
Yes.
So anusaya level, the latent level, has to sometime generate, have to sometime germinate, sometime promote its potential. So that even that moment, one can notice if one's mind is fairly clean, fairly mindful, alert. So that is there. Not sometimes it is not during the meditation, so-called formal meditation time.
Yes.
So you have to on guard every time. So
yeah.
Because the defilements are possible to arise in our mind at any time. When the conducive environment, the proper conditions are available, it is not... It is not merely in the during the cushion, I mean while you are in the retreat.
Yes. Yes.
So that is where we have to be in full alert every time.
Yes.
Sato sampajano.
Yes.
So you have to be mindful, you have to be alert, you have to maintain a clear comprehension about the whole situation. Then only you can trace when that suppling is arising, that very early stage of the defilement is arising.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. And then as far as the anagami, if I've reached, let's say somebody reaches anagami, so they've overcome the first five lower fetters, or is there a possibility that those could come up again?
No, can't.
Those are gone.
Even the latent level has to be gone.
The latent level.
Even the latent level has been gone. That's why, that's the in a way, the advantage.
Yeah.
That's the advantage. So they can be, even the potential has gone. Now, say for example, now assume that you are developing a metta meditation. For the whole universe, now you can maintain metta. But if you haven't been an anagami, so still the ill will can arise in you. Even though you are a good meditator in metta meditation, that doesn't guarantee that you have completely uprooted ill will. As a latent tendency, it is available. Currently, your mind is quite, beautified with the loving kindness, but ill will, the potential is still there. So the moment that you are that loving kindness meditation subsides, it's strength subsides, then they are still, when the conducive environment is also available, then say someone is disrespecting, someone is ignoring you, someone is belittling you, and say like that, many things can happen. Immediately the ill will can arise because the environment is available now, the conducive conditions are available.
Yeah.
So immediately ill will can arise.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Any more questions on your side, Bhante?
No, done. I'll
let you invite Renuka for the next question.
Hello, Mr. Vasarane Bhante.
Yes.
Bhante, actually, while I was listening to you, I was thinking, this question came to my mind, because recently I was reading about different people's view about the sunyatavade, emptiness and maintaining emptiness and being enlightened through the emptiness. So, I thought that emptiness is something where we can condition our mind and think, I'm empty, I'm not getting any thought, I'm clear from thoughts, and somebody can condition their mind and being empty. But it means till the latent the defilements has not gone away, isn't it, Bhante?
Actually, the proper emptiness has a fair depth. Now, when one is arriving emptiness, so that means he thoroughly has to understand there is no person. So the typical definition that the Buddha given for sunyata is that sunyamidam attenava attaniyenava. So that is the definition that Buddha gave for the emptiness. So proper emptiness is where he thoroughly understands it is completely free from a person, completely rid of any kind of a substantiality. So that is the thorough understanding of emptiness. It is not mere suppression of thoughts. Rather, by going through proper practice, he thoroughly understood there is no person here, there is no individual here, there is no self here, there is nothing substantial here, there is no inner core here. So likewise, it's a very thorough understanding through practice, practical understanding, that there is no person, an individual, self, essence, core here. Then only his mind become free. So then it is what we can call the proper emptiness, what we call the sunyata. And that also one has to further inculcate, further cultivate, further consolidate. Then only other latent defilements or other subtle defilements can be traced, can be recognized and slowly abandoned. So the sunyata viharana, sunyata practice is very important. But achieving that proper way is also important. I mean, it is not that, as you correctly mentioned, if that someone is reading that and then one is trying to, without going the proper way, without involving with proper practice, if one is trying to suppress one's thoughts and trying to maintain an empty mind. So I also feel it's a very temporary state where still the potential is available since he hasn't gone through the proper path. The understanding part is missing.
In that case, but hey, you know, so through the meditation you can reach that empty kind of a place and where you're peaceful and everything, but still if you don't understand your mind really, you know, how these things are coming out, and if you don't investigate them, so you will still have a potential to get those things coming out, isn't it, Bhante?
Correct.
Is
correct.
That what you are saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So being in that.
Now the thing is, now assume that someone is properly meditating and he went through proper practice and he thoroughly practiced and assumed that he is practicing Vedana Anupassana. And he recognized different pleasurable feelings, he recognized different painful feelings, he recognized different neutral feelings. So likewise he is continuing. And he, as a result of that, he thoroughly now understands how impermanent they are, how transient they are, how quickly they come and go. And there is no person generating that, rather they are being promoted as a result of the contact. Time to time the different conditions, contact happens, and as a result of corresponding feelings happen. So likewise he thoroughly understands this conditionality, the Patisamuppada also. Now he's, in a way we can see how he's broadening his understanding. Now when he's broadening his understanding, his wisdom, there may be a possibility, due to that understanding, due to the thorough understanding of impermanence and this conditionality, so he may now understand further about the non-self. Because things are completely transient, inconstant, so how can there be a person in this process? How can there be an ongoing soul in this process? So he now further give thorough understanding into the non-self characteristic. So this is how typically the practitioner's mind is slowly improving. And now more than in the impermanence, his mind is inclined towards the non-self, anatta. And there may be a possibility now, seeing this anatta, non-self, his mind become freed, because nothing is there to hold him. And completely it become empty, because there is nothing is there. There is no person, there is no soul, there is nothing to protect, nothing to hold, nothing is worthy of holding. So he simply avoid grasping and his mind is being freed. So that is how typically the sunyata achieved through the non-self. When someone is understanding through one's vipassana practice, the non-self nature, the anatta nature, or the parato, that everything is fairly conditioned and empty nature. So when someone understands that, then the mind get released. So that is what called the sunyata vimoksha mukha. So it's a opening of the mind happened through the emptiness. So that is the proper emptiness that one is achieved. So that emptiness also now one has to consolidate. Again and again one has to reach that, stay there for some time, stay there longer for some time. So likewise now one is mastering that slowly.
So I have another question in that sense.
Yeah.
Now, when you are in the peaceful mind, suddenly you there can be a thought coming in. You can see a thought coming in,
right,
that past event,
mm-hmm,
maybe a happy event or maybe a sad event, but you know that there's no substance in that sense, but still that thought comes in.
Correct.
It means you are cleaning your mind. It means you don't get those thoughts anyway, or you don't get excited with those thoughts anyway.
Yeah, the second one. So thoughts may happen. Even to the arahants, thoughts can happen.
Yeah.
But they are not identifying with it. Allowing thoughts to come and go. So thoughts can't overwhelm them. Overwhelm them, or thoughts can't control them, and based upon thoughts they may not get into any kind of proliferation. So mind remains calm without mixing with those thoughts.
Just try to tend it and let go of that.
Exactly.
That is what we have to practice, isn't it?
Exactly. So that's what I explained in the many suttas, like say for example in the Sona Sutta, there are Venerable Sona explains Arahanta Sona. So after he became an Arahant, so he visited the Buddha and he explained. So when mind is there, there's a possibility of arising various thoughts. But the mind has the capacity to maintain its clarity, maintain its unwavering kind of stability. It's still that its stillness is not being shocked, not being wavered. So that stillness is remaining, unwavering nature is available, it's not being shocked, not being shaken by those incoming thoughts. So he may see how these thoughts come and go. That's it.
It's really helpful to
me.
I think it's great. Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you very much. Yeah,
okay, thank you. I'll let you invite Sohani for the next question.
Teruan Sarnai Bhante, Amsterdam.
Yes.
My question is actually, this thing came to my mind and experience, many experiences actually, but when I was having a conversation, a certain word that I heard triggered within me this pressure. I didn't want to hear that. Now, but I saw that at that moment. And then, actually, there was nothing. The conversation kind of ended for me at that point, because there was nothing I could say anymore, because here I was involved with looking at my own that feelings of hurt and whatever coming up, and watching it. Now, that after that, actually, I didn't even hear what was said beyond that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, is that how this whole thing gets put into practice?
Yeah, we can say so, because there are sounds or whatever these events are merely events. And we are the ones adding to that. We are the ones coloring them. We are the ones adding too much emphasis to them. But when we see that, how we do all these fabrications, how we do all these additions, multiplications, constructions, then we become somewhat ashamed of doing that. We understand it's not necessary. And once we stop that, so that event is very much nothing. It becomes a mere event. It is completely a kind of weak event, not a strong event.
Yes, it becomes a useless exercise to engage in that anymore.
Exactly.
But from a sort of a lay point of view, it can be viewed as being weak. That again is my ego coming up, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like the need to get involved, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Correct.
Such
correct.
A cycle.
Yes. Yes.
Cycle.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. Okay, I got it. Thank you. Teruan Sarnai.
Yeah, Teruan Sarnai.
Yeah.
There's a question coming from our side. Yes. Yeah.
Excuse me, Swaminathan, but it's interesting. She caught it and didn't say anything. It sounds like she didn't react.
Okay.
She just stopped.
Exactly.
So that's a...
That is necessary. So that's why Buddha emphasized, Janato bhikkave passato asavanam khayam vadami, no ajanato no apassato.
Yes.
Monks, you can overcome influxes, that their operation, by knowing them and seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know, you need to see. So when it is arising in the mind, you need to point it out. You know, you need to trace it, you need to notice it. Oh, this is there. So you need to notice it. That means seeing, yeah. At that very moment, you see that immediately.
Yes.
But you are not reacting. You are not being deluded by that.
Yes.
So as a result of that, you are not adding, you are not subtracting, you are not multiplying, you are not constructing, you are not preparing, you are not fabricating. Mm-hmm. You completely step back and watch.
Yes. And then maybe next time she would be prepared.
Yeah,
and
even prepared.
Not even react.
It doesn't have any value at all then, isn't it? It's a mere sankhara.
Yeah.
It's a mere, what we sometimes Buddha mentioned as Suddha Sankhara. It's a mere event.
Yes.
It is coming and it has a nature to go.
Yeah.
We don't need to worry.
Yes.
We don't need to worry. We need to simply say, oh, it's coming. Okay, let it go.
Yes. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah. Actually, we are the ones making things difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? So thoughts are mere thoughts, but I give some emphasis to it. So I am attributing a thought, I am attributing a certain sign to a person, then I mess it up.
Yeah. Then we're loose, we begin to loosen these ideas up of ourselves and you don't...
Various things, yeah. But if I know it as it is, properly, even at its early stage,
yeah.
Knowing, okay, this is just a mere thought, just a mere sign.
Yes.
Just a mere image, mental image. So likewise, if I am able to put them at their correct perspective, then there is nothing to worry too much.
Yeah.
It will slowly, naturally pass away.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, that's all we have today, Jennifer. Then we will conclude the session.
Yes, Sanjay. Thank you very much.
Okay. So we gather today also and discuss some Dhamma according to the Buddha's teaching, and we'll share all these merits with the celestial beings, with our past relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to overcome all 10 fetters. So we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavatachamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe deva anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe bhuta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambhatam punya sampadam sambe satta anumodantu sambha sampatti siddhya. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.